In other words, the CD will teach you how to read as well as teach your child. So you save the cost of a tutor, particularly if you have an older illiterate or functional illiterate. This might be the thing to use for them. It's quite good. I've seen it. I've worked with the originator of it, who is a good Christian homeschooler, and he wanted to produce. He liked Alpha Phonics so much that he decided to put it on CD-ROM. So it is available, and if any of you want information on it, I have a flyer. Now, getting to the subject of writing and arithmetic, the two other of the R's, the three R's, you know, the public schools actually teach six R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, remedial reading, remedial writing, and remedial arithmetic. We just teach the three. And a summing up of the primary subjects and how to teach them, I put in a book entitled How to Tutor. And in that book, you will find a section on teaching reading in the phonetic manner, a section on cursive writing, and a section on arithmetic. So it's all in this one book. Now, as you heard me back in the previous class state that you should not teach your child to print. What I meant by that was that you should not formally teach your child to print. If your child wants to print on his own or her own, that's fine. But that is not, you should not spend any time formally teaching your child to print. Now, why is that? First of all, I want to ask you this. How many of you believe that a child should be taught to write? Anybody here who thinks that now that we have typewriters and keyboards and computers and walkie-talkies and cassettes, that children no longer have to be taught to write? So you all believe that a child should be taught to write. Okay, now the problem is, how should you teach your child to write? What should you teach your child to write? Well, over the centuries, mankind developed what is considered the most efficient form of writing, and that's cursive script. Now, what's cursive script? It's where the letters all join together. Why is that? Why is that much more efficient than print? Because you don't have to constantly lift up your pen from the page. It's on the page, and you keep writing, and when you end the word, then you go to the next word, etc. The letters are connected together, so the word sticks together. You know, when you print, the letters are all over the place. You don't know where one word ends and then another one begins. So you have much less discipline. Cursive requires that you have greater discipline in the formation of letters, in seeing the word forms correctly. Now, the question is often asked, well, if you're teaching a child to read print, aren't they going to be confused if you teach them to write cursive? No, and I'll tell you a little secret that maybe your grandparents have kept from you. Those of my generation and previous to my generation were all taught cursive first. We were never taught to print. We were all taught cursive first. And how many of you have grandmothers who have better handwriting than you do? Isn't that true? Why do they have better handwriting than the present generation? Because they were taught cursive first, and they were taught penmanship. If you spend 2 years teaching your child to print, your child will develop all sorts of bad habits, which are not conducive to developing a good cursive. Now, say, for example, you want to do it the way the schools do it. Print for the first 2 years, and then you make a switch to cursive. Well, what happens? In the third grade, the kids are so busy learning all about the racial problems in South Africa and the uses of contraception that they don't have time to develop a good cursive any longer. You see, it takes time, and the teacher doesn't have the time to supervise it. The children don't want to take the time to learn it because they're printing very rapidly, and why should they stop and slow down and start writing as if they were in the first grade all over again? So you know who are the only ones who learn cursive, who do it well? So what happens? You've got the children, some children will print for the rest of their lives. Some children develop a hybrid, part cursive, part print. You know, some letters that are easy to join together, they'll join together. And so you get all strange little groups of letters on the page. And then some kids develop a good cursive. You know why? Because they've been doing it secretly on their own, without their parents' permission and without the teacher's permission, because they always wanted to write cursive. So they taught themselves, you see. And they're the ones who always develop a good cursive. Occasionally you get some who were, you know, taught it by their parents or maybe a grandparent or something like that. Now, the reason why we learned to read, print, and write cursive was because there's no conflict. In fact, cursive helps you learn to read print. Now, how is that possible? Well, I'll explain it to you. You know very well that when you teach your child to print a manuscript, ball and stick, right? That's manuscript. So how does a B and a D look? This is a B, a line with a ball this way, and there's a D. They look very much alike, don't they? And don't kids often confuse B's and D's? All the time. But in cursive, a B starts like an L and goes like this. And a D starts like a A and goes like that. You can't possibly confuse those letters, can you? So that knowledge is then transferred to the reading process and helps the children distinguish between B's and D's, you see. And it works beautifully. It's the same, say, with F's and T's. You know, you have the F, and then you've got the T. And some kids might confuse that, but in cursive, an F starts like an L and goes like that, and a T starts straight up like that, you see. They're not going to confuse those two letters, ever. What about G's and P's? That's also letters that are easily confused. You have the G, P. Well, a G in cursive starts like an A and goes like this. A P starts like an S, goes that way, and goes like that. So you're never going to confuse them. So you see how they actually help in identifying the letters correctly. Also, when you teach cursive, you become aware that it's necessary to hold the pen correctly. You know, nowadays, what they're teaching in the schools is invented spelling. How many here have heard of invented spelling? What is invented spelling? It's telling kids to write before they even know how to read or spell or form the letters or anything. They just say, write. So what do kids do? They hold the pen this way. They hold it this way. They've got the dagger stab, the stabbing, the muscular dystrophy hold, and they develop also. They use four fingers. They twist them. They do all sorts of things, and that's terrible. There's one simple, correct way to hold a pen, and it's this way: these three fingers. See, like that, it rests in like kind of a cradle. And these two fingers join together to give it, to hold it. And it requires the least effort. It's the least tiring. You could write for hours this way and never tire. And I've done that. I'm a writer by profession, and I have written for hours and have never had a cramp, never tired. If you're going to use four fingers, you'll have a cramp. Now, the reason why so many people are able to write this way these days with these very poor methods of writing, because they don't do much writing. You know, maybe they'll scribble a shopping list or scribble their name on a check. That's about it. But you don't know what your kid's going to be doing 20 years from now, do you? You don't know to what extent they're going to have to use their writing ability. And so you want to provide them with the best, most efficient way of writing, which was developed by our forefathers, by thousands of years of experience, and they found that this was the easiest, the most relaxing, least tiring method. These three fingers, that's it. That's it. So you want to make sure the child first learns how to hold the pen correctly. Then you want to teach the child how to form the letters correctly. You see, in invented spelling, they form the letters any way they want. But in cursive, you're pretty restricted. You see, because the one letter has to join with the other. So you can't do things backwards. You know how kids in printing will print things backwards. Or so like in the upside down fashion. You can't do that in cursive. In cursive, it's got to go from here to there, you see. You know, like you start with the C, then you go in the H. Then you've got to be able to get to the R. And then you've got to begin to the I. And then the S. And then up to the T. And then down and up to the M. And then over to the A. And over to the S, you see. So you've got to be able to correct these things. While the kids, when they're learning to print, they'll do it in all sorts of ways. You know, they'll do like this, and they may do the H this way, or this way, or this way. You know, any way they want, you see. So there's no discipline in the print as there is in the in cursive. So you get writing discipline. You get word order. And also, you learn to spell better. I'll tell you why you learn to spell better. Because after you've been spelling the same word many, many times, your hand acquires knowledge. Just as if you're a typist. How many people here are touch typists? Well, you know, as a touch typist, you know when you've made an error, right? The sequence just isn't there, the proper sequence. You know you made an error, you stop and you look, yeah, and you correct yourself. It's the same. It's the same when you learn to write cursive. Your hand develops certain sequences of movements that remain with you in writing certain words and certain names, etc. Sequences of movements. So that's another reason why cursive is better, whereas you don't get that same effect with print. Now, what are some of the bad habits that print creates? Of course, first, the way they hold the pen. When you're printing, the child will look, have the paper generally straight up and down and will start exerting enormous pressure. You know, they're probably digging through the page, as you know, as they're writing, making these letters. And but when you're going to cursive, and so they have this style of writing straight up and down, putting enormous pressure. Now, if they're going to switch over to cursive, what do they have to do? They have to then turn the page counterclockwise, you see. They've got to relax. The hand has got to be relaxed. It wasn't relaxed when they're doing this. It's got to relax. So they have a totally different way of writing. And not many kids can make that transition. See, I'm explaining to you why cursive should come first. I'm not saying child shouldn't be taught to print, but he should be taught cursive first, print later. Cursive first, print later. Because if you learn cursive, if you develop a good cursive script, you can always learn to print very nicely. But the opposite is not the case. If you learn print first, you may never develop a decent cursive because you've developed such bad habits. You've acquired such bad habits, you may never develop a good cursive. So for a right-handed writer, the paper is tilted this way. How many people here have left-handed kids? All right, so already you have, you know, there's something special there. You've got to treat it different. If a left-handed child is taught to print first, what is that left-handed child going to do? He's going to hook. Paper straight, and he's going to hook so he can see what he's doing. But if you teach that left-handed child cursive first, you turn the paper to the extreme right clockwise, and then the child must write from the bottom up because you just can't hook. It's too painful. He must write from the bottom up, and left-handed children can develop as good a cursive writing style as any right-handed person. So that also helps the left-handed child greatly to learn cursive first, because then they develop a good script, and they be, instead of developing these terrible handwritings, they develop a good script. So there are these very potent reasons why you should teach cursive first. As I said, I'm not against learning to print. I mean, my generation learned to print in art class. You see, we were taught printing later on as an art form, not as a form of writing, but as an art form. Because I often, and of course, parents will come to me and say, well, if you teach a cursive, and if your child applies for a job and it says, please print, I always ask them, well, how old's your child? And they say, you know, 7 years old. I say, well, you've got time. You know, he can learn to print between now and when he's 16 or applies for a job, you know. So that's a rather silly question. In any case, that's all there is to it. Incidentally, why is cursive easier than print script? It's easier because there are only three movements in all of cursive. There's the undercurve, the overcurve, and the up and down. That's all there is to cursive. And kids love to make circles and squigglies and all. It's more natural for them rather than having to make straight lines and perfect little, you know, balls and circles, ball and stick, you see. And also it helps their self-esteem to know that they're writing grown-up writing, you see, not baby writing. Grown-up writing right away. Now, sure, if the child is very young, 5 years old, it'll take a little time before they develop a good cursive script. Don't worry if the first letters they produce look like spaghetti. It's okay. It takes very little time before they gain control and develop a good cursive. It takes time. You have the time when the child is 5 and 6 and is willing to take instruction, you see. You have the time, and they are willing to learn, and you can correct them when they make errors. I've never had a child who complained about being corrected. They all want to do the right thing. Because the worst thing for a child is to be doing something wrong and to be humiliated when told or caught, you see. That happened in a school where this youngster was being taught invented spelling, and he had a little sister at home who was a budding artist. So he wanted to write a sign, artist at work. So he made up the sign. He printed the sign, and I'll just give you an idea of what he wrote. You know, artist at work, W-E-R-K. Well, he showed it to the teacher and says, teacher said, oh, that's wonderful. She didn't want to correct him because, ooh, that's going to hurt his self-esteem. You know, he's going to be a little puddle on the floor if I dare to even suggest that he did something wrong. So he took this little sign to his sister, and he said, here, I've got a sign for you, artist at work. And she looked at it. She said, that's not the way to spell work. And he said, yes, it is. My teacher told me so. And she said, no, it isn't. And they got the dictionary, and he saw that work was spelled W-O-R-K. Well, that poor boy was so humiliated to think that his, and he was so angry at the thought that his teacher permitted him to leave that room without correcting him. So that he made a fool of himself before his sister and was embarrassed that he did not know how to spell the word work. So this idea that kids don't want to be taught how to do it correctly is absolute nonsense. It's because the teachers don't know how to do it correctly. That's the reason why, you see. So kids want to know how to do it well and correctly. I've taught enough kids myself to know that. I've never had any of them tell me, you know, I don't want to know how to do it right. They expect to be taught correctly. You know, you guide their hands. Sometimes you have to take their hand and guide them in forming the letters. They appreciate that because they want to know how to do it correctly. So those are the reasons. Any questions on cursive now before we get into the arithmetic part? Yes.
I am just get curious if you researched any the brain research they do. In my experience, there are vast quantities of men who print, and more women I see. But is there?
Well, because they've all been taught to print, and men are stubborn. They don't want to change over into cursive. They don't want to take the time, and they've developed what they call a decent print. They have the habit, and they say, why should I now learn another way of writing? And so they just put up resistance and keep printing for the rest of their lives, you see. But if they were taught cursive first, they'd learn cursive, you see, and they'd develop just as good handwriting as anybody, you see. Any other questions concerning cursive? Have I sold you on cursive first? I did a newsletter on it called How Should We Teach Our Children to Write Cursive First, Print Later? Incidentally, I also convinced the Abeka people that a cursive should be taught in, you know, kindergarten and first grade. So they've developed a cursive workbook for kindergarten and first grade. It should be available soon, because I've already seen the format of it, and it's a very nice book. Yes?
When I was in fourth grade, my teacher taught me to write with my paper strings and things like that.
Right.
And so I really have to think about trying to turn my paper to write like that.
Well, you don't have, I mean, you can go on writing the way you're writing. I'm not saying that that you necessarily as an adult have to go through the torture of trying to relearn how to write. I mean, if your writing is adequate for what you're doing, it's legible, it's adequate, and as long as you can sign your name in cursive, you know, that much you have to have, then it's up to you whether you want to go through relearning and learning cursive, realizing that it's going to take time. It's not something that you just, you know, can do it snappily as the educators think you could do in the third grade. You see, so it's up to you to decide whether you want to do that or not. But it can be done. People have done that. They've taught themselves all kinds of skills as adults, you see. Yes?
She wants to be a teacher. So would you encourage her to reteach herself?
Well, all right. If you're going to be a teacher, then definitely teach yourself how to write cursive. And in my book, How to Tutor... Now, I got a cursive alphabet from the Schaefer Pen Company. They provided me with this model, which is basically the one that I was taught in grade school. And you know, you've seen them on the tops of the blackboards, you know, that sort of thing. As a matter of fact, you can get those strips, those cursive strips that you can paste on your kids' desks that are cursive and they can follow. But the thing is, you've got to really supervise the development and of each letter to make sure they learn to put the letters together. And you'd be surprised how some kids pick it up very quickly and they develop a very nice, neat print. For example, the little boy I spoke of in the other class who had such a bad reading problem, I taught him cursive, and now he has, when he wants to, he can write a very nice, neat cursive. And the interesting thing about him, though, is that he has this desire to write things as tiny as possible, you know, miniature little thing, and he'll take pains to do it, which helps, you know, because it requires very careful writing. But then he can be very careless, too, you know, if he writes too quickly. And I always stop him and say, hey, I want you to do that over again. I want it to be neat, you see. Be demanding. Set high standards. Don't accept sloppy work. Just tell if the child just is rushing through it, say, that won't do. Do it over. Do it neatly. I want to see you write nice and neatly, you see, and they'll do it. Yes?
Are the bonnet cards available in cursive also, and should that not be coordinated with the teaching of cursive first?
You can do that. You can show words in cursive. As a matter of fact, I collect old... school books, and some of the early readers, you will find that they would have the word in print and then in cursive side by side. It's not all that necessary. I'll tell you why. Because the reason why we have the flashcards for reading is to develop automaticity. It's for drill purposes. Quick recognition of the letters. That's the whole point of you. You can use the but people generally, when they write cursive, can pretty well read cursive. You know, they really don't need any special drill on cursive. I've never seen any necessity for it, but I don't see any harm in it. You know, I don't see any harm in it. Yes?
My dad gets really mad because I write in a hybrid, or whatever you want to call it.
Hybrid? Yeah. You're the hybrid type. Okay.
And I would like to teach myself how to learn cursive, but it's better to do like the words or
First do the letters, and first learn each letter, the form of each letter. Then begin joining the letters together. And you could use the alphaphonics. I don't know if you have the alphaphonics book, but where you first join two-letter words, like as, at, you see. And then you get into three-letter words, and then into four-letter words. Now, you certainly sign your name cursively, don't you? You don't?
I just kind of pass it off.
Oh, I see. All right. You know, are your checks acceptable with your signature?
They raise their eyebrows, but they'll take it.
Well, okay. But in any case, so you practice joining the letters together and do it in a step-by-step fashion so that by the time you're writing five-letter words and six-letter words, it's easy for you. But first learn the correct formation of each letter and the proper sequence of the strokes as you go along. Because if you want one letter to join with the next, they have to be done in proper sequence, you see. That's the hope. That's what makes it easy and efficient and swift. Yes?
Teachers who are giving notes in classroom situations on chalkboard, Yeah. Do you recommend that teachers would also write in cursive or...
Sure. Yeah, when you're giving... I know my teachers did. When I was growing up, of course, all the teachers taught cursive. I mean, your grade school teachers taught cursive. They expected you, and when they were on the board, they did write in cursive. And they expected you to spell, do your spelling, your essays, everything in cursive. It was just unheard of to just, you know, laboriously print everything. You know, printing was for making Christmas cards or posters or that sort of thing. It was not a form of writing. It was to be used for other reasons. Now, of course, with the need to print applications and that sort of thing, one should be taught a good print script also. But that comes later. What I'm saying is the sequence is important. Cursive first, print later. I'm not trying to put down print and say, no, don't teach printing. I'm simply saying that if you teach it in reverse fashion, you create problems for those who want to learn cursive. Cursive first, print later. That's it. Simple to remember. Yes?
What about those of us who have done it wrong already? And how do we help our kids?
Well, you just get a good cursive program. Either you can use How to Tutor, which has a cursive section, a section on how to teach cursive letters. Where is it? And you have to show the child how to hold the pen and how to place the paper. And also how to sit correctly. It's a good way of getting him to sit straight up and down, you know, get that foot out from under you, you know, sit straight, that sort of thing. And it's all there, and you can learn it also. And but it's good. It's good to learn. It's good discipline at this time in life, too. Yes?
You mentioned getting the alphabet model from the Shaper Pen Company. Is that what you said?
Well, that's what I got. I'm just saying that where I got it. But in my alphaphonics book, I do have a blow-up of the... let's see where I put the book. Oh, I thought it was here.
Well, the reason I ask is if you go into a school supply store now, the alphabet charts have all these ugly little pictures on them.
Oh, here it is. Yeah. Yeah, oh, God.
It's hard to find the script.
Well, you see, the problem with today's market is that they're all catering to this, you know, pictures, everything is pictures, cartoons, animals. I mean, you know, you go through a public school room and you think you're in a zoo. You probably are in a zoo. The kids are acting like animals, too. Because they're looking at animals all day long. That's all they have are cartoons and bunnies and gorillas and dinosaurs. I mean, you know, they're all over the place. That's ridiculous. When I was going to school in the first grade, the only picture we had was that of George Washington. That was it. You know, I used to look up at that picture, and that was that Stuart painting in which it wasn't quite completed. It looked like he was in the clouds somewhere. And I said, well, that's George Washington in heaven, you see. It was inspiring, much more inspiring than seeing a bunch of stupid cartoon characters. You know, they've Mickey Moused education to death. Don't Mickey Mouse your home school, you see. Uplift your children. Have them look upward to the Lord, upward to God, not down to the animal kingdom. Because, you see, that works in with evolution. They're teaching that they're teaching the kids that they too are animals, you see. So they create this bond, this bonding with these animals, with the animal kingdom. Downward, while they should be bonding with their spiritual father in heaven, their heavenly father. You see, that's the bond that you want, and so you decorate your home in such a manner that you provide that kind of inspiration. I'm not saying that you can't use any cartoons and things like that, but. You know, certain limits. Don't overdo it the way the schools do. And of course, you know what happens at Halloween in public schools. I mean, all you got are witches and all kinds of, and goblins and ogres and monsters. And that's not very healthy for these kids. Any other questions on cursive? Well, did you have a question?
Me?
Yes.
You said that kids didn't mind to be corrected.
Yes.
I don't know, my little brother, if you tried to say anything to him about any schoolwork or anything he's done wrong, he gets really upset and he just...
Like what? Like, give me an example.
Anywhere from, doing the wrong math problem, putting the wrong answer down, spelling something wrong, writing something wrong, it just, whatever.
Well, you know, I guess it depends on how you approach the problem. I don't know how you're approaching him. Are you just going to say, you're wrong? Or do you go over and say, well, let's work on this problem together. Like, you go over it. Do you have the answer, for example? Like, is it something where you've got a problem and then you've got an answer book where you can say, hey, did you notice that your answer is not quite the answer in this book?
No.
Oh, well, forget it. He's in public school. No wonder he hates to be corrected. You should have told me that to begin with. Oh, well, he's a mess. If he isn't a mess now, he's going to be a mess. He's in the process. His brain is in the process of being destroyed. You have to understand. I mean it. His brain is in the process of being destroyed, and you're seeing the symptoms. The fact that he objects to everything you say about him are the symptoms, because he's been taught by his teacher that that's okay. It's okay to be incorrect. You see, they instill that in the kids that it's okay not to have the correct answer. As a matter of fact, in my latest newsletter, I quote the Idaho Statesman, about the way they're teaching math in the schools in Boise. And the teachers tell them the correct answer is not necessary. All you have to know is the method. How do you solve the problem? The kids are getting totally confused. So now you're coming up and telling him that he's wrong when his teachers are telling him that being right is not important. You see what's happening? Two different values, two different sets of values. He's totally confused. And unless you get him out of that school and start teaching him all over again, he's going to be a mess. Poor thing. How old is he?
7.
7 years old. That's the way it is. It's a pity. It's a pity, but he's going to be among the victims. He's going to be another one of these kids who's going to be crippled for life and not know why. People are going to. He's going to think he's dumb, or that he's got something wrong with him, and since his teachers have told him that it's all right to be the way you are, I hope I didn't, well, I know you're crying, and I don't blame you, because it's a sorry situation. But your mother has to take him out. I didn't want to be cruel. That was not the purpose. It was to shock. It was to shock people into recognition that what I'm talking about is serious business. These are, the lives of these kids are at stake. Their intelligence, their mental health is at stake. And sometimes the only way that you can impress upon people the what's happening is to give them reality treatment. All right, let's get over to arithmetic. Arithmetic. Today, of course, they no longer teach arithmetic. They teach math. What happened to arithmetic? Well, what happened was that they've subsumed arithmetic into math, and now there's no such thing as arithmetic. There's computation, but there's no arithmetic. Why do they do that? For the very same reason that they're not teaching kids to read, they're not teaching kids to write. They're teaching them that so that they won't know arithmetic. Now, why don't they want them to know arithmetic? Well, because if you know arithmetic, you're going to know when your government is spending billions of dollars needlessly. You're going to know how to add things up. You're going to know how to put two and two together. And the powers that be don't want that. They want the kids to be as ignorant as possible. And so they subsume arithmetic into math. They say the kids have got to learn algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus. But they don't have to learn arithmetic. If they have to count, we'll give them calculators. Well, how are the kids going to know when they've punched the wrong button if they haven't learned arithmetic? I'm going to give them calculus. No more rote memorization. Rote memorization is bad. It's evil. I want to ask you people here, how many people here use algebra frequently? Couple. Are you engineers? Do you work for a computer company? Okay. How many of you use geometry frequently? Yeah, the engineers are there. Okay. How many people here use trigonometry frequently? That gentleman, he's in. How many of you use calculus frequently? Well, you're hesitating. One back there. How many of you use arithmetic frequently? Everybody's hand goes up. Isn't that interesting that everybody has to use arithmetic to survive? To survive, you have to know arithmetic. And so few people actually use those functions that are now being so heavily stressed in the public schools while arithmetic is being downgraded to nothing. And yet you can't get through a day without using arithmetic. In the supermarket, buying things, buying a car, purchasing a house, mortgage payments, calculating interest on your bank accounts, doing your income tax. Well, now you have H&R Block, you don't even have to do it, you know, just give it somebody else to do your income tax for you. So you must know arithmetic. Now, what is arithmetic? Arithmetic is a counting system, that's all it is. It's totally separated from what we call math. It's a separate, totally separate division from math. In other words, you can learn arithmetic without having learned algebra, geometry, any of those things. You can learn all of those. You must have arithmetic in order to be able to do all of those other things. You see, you must have arithmetic, basically. But arithmetic is a self-contained counting system. That's all it is. In additions, you count forward. In subtractions, you count backwards. In multiplication, you count in multiples, forward. In division, you count in multiples, backwards. So that's all there is to it. Now, our arithmetic system is the most ingenious system ever invented by man. We use 10 symbols with which to do everything. You know the 10 symbols, you know? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's it. Those 10 symbols, you can write any number, perform any arithmetic counting function with just 10 symbols. Now, how did we ever get that? Who invented that? Well, it was a long, long period of development. Prior to the use of these 10 abstract symbols, people used to count pebbles, count knots. The Romans had a mixed system of what we call unit counting, with symbols standing for, you know, like a V, so you had 1, 2, 3, then you had 4, then 5, then 6. Very difficult system to use. But someone invented, these numbers were Arabic, came from the Arabs. The symbols themselves for the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, and they stand for something. They represent quantity, you see. Each number represents quantity. It's a symbol for quantity. That's what it is. So it's quantity. In arithmetic, you add, the question is how many or how much? How many or how much? That's all it is. It's counting. It's counting. Now, the beautiful part of our system is that we use place value. Do you know what place value is? You know that when I write 1995, that this is 1,995. That's place value. This number is not 1 plus 9 is 10, 19 and 5 are 14, 19 and 5 are 24. That's not what this number means. 1,995. Now, how was that developed? Well, in India, they used a counting board in order to keep track of counting. So they had a ones column, a tens column, a 100s column, a 1,000th column, etc. And so they would put beads. You know, I have, say, 4 ones, 3 tens, 2 hundreds, 5 thousands. You see, that's the counting board. So you had, then somebody managed to connect the Arabic numerals representing quantity. So the Arab numeral for 4 was this. The Arab numeral for 2 was this. The Arab numeral for 3 was this. The Arab numeral for 4 was also this. So they'd say, well, we have 4,234. That's how they got place value. Now, what happens if you don't have anything there? They said, gee, that's a problem. What do we do? So somebody invented a symbol for nothing. Zero. That's probably one of the greatest inventions the human mind has ever produced. Without that zero, you couldn't have space flight. You couldn't have the 20th century. You couldn't have computers. You couldn't have all what we have today. See the importance of that zero? One of the greatest inventions of the human mind, a symbol for nothing. Isn't that incredible? All right. Well, now, how do you learn to use this system proficiently? Well, when it began to be used in the around the 12th century, and they were going from Roman numerals, that is from unit counting, concrete counting, to the use of abstractions, abstract symbols. And here are the abstract symbols. They discovered that the best way was to memorize the arithmetic facts. Once you memorize the arithmetic facts, you could do it in your head. You didn't need pebbles. You didn't need concrete. You didn't need unit counting. You could do it up here. Your mind became a calculator. You see, So that's why we develop what they call the addition tables, the subtraction tables, the multiplication tables, and the division tables. And that's why they had to be memorized, because that's what the system is all about. It's a system that uses 10 abstract symbols and does away with the need for using concretes. And you've got to memorize it. Now, the best way to memorize arithmetic facts is by rote memorization. You've heard of rote memorization? What's rote memorization? Repetition, repetition, until you know it cold, you see. That's all there is to it. It's the easiest way that kids learn arithmetic. Easiest way they learn it is by rote. Now, the schools are saying, oh, no, you mustn't. That's such torture. Is that torture? Rote memorization, it's not torture. But the schools use that as an excuse to say, what we have to do is teach the kids concepts first. Now, that's going it totally opposite the way it should be done. You should teach, have them, after they've memorized it all, then they recognize the concept because they see the patterns. They see the system as a whole. They see how it works. Oh, so this is what it's all about, you see. Each arithmetic fact is indeed a fact. Like, for example, if you're teaching addition, so we'll skip ahead, we'll say like 4 plus 5 equals 9. How could you make sure the child knows that that's a fact? Well, you all have jars of pennies, do you not? It's better to use pennies than anything else I can think of. First of all, kids love money, and that's the thing they're going to be counting most for the rest of their lives. You might as well use pennies. Yeah, so you have 4 pennies here, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you have 5 pennies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you say count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then you put, you know, 9. This is the symbol for 9. They learn the symbols. This stands for this. This stands for that. And then you can also put the whole 9, you know, 9 yards there and say that's 9 stands for that. And what you do is you go through the whole thing, first the ones, then the twos, then the threes, then the fours. You go through columns. And what you do is you have the child memorize, and they see the pattern. Very simple pattern. You know, you start, say, with 0 plus 1, 0 plus 2, 0 plus 3, and then you go to 0 plus 1, 1 plus 1, 1 plus 2, 1 plus 3, 1 plus 4, and you know, the equals, and they see that this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, wait a minute, this is 4. This should be 4. They see the patterns, and they go into the higher numbers. Say, for example, you're dealing with 9s. You have 0 plus 9 equals 9. 1 plus 9 equals 10, 2 plus 9 equals 11, 3 plus 9 equals 12. Well, they learn the patterns very easily, but then what you want to do is to mix them up. You have to mix them up. And whenever they hesitate, if they can't think of the answer, you immediately flash the correct answer. You don't say figure it out, because if you're going to say figure it out, what are they going to do? Right? Well, you don't want them to spend the rest of their lives counting their fingers. You want to eliminate that. So you want them to memorize the fact. The only way they're going to memorize the fact is they see it over and over again to the point where they say, don't show me, I know it, you see. And what you do is you cover up the answers and have them go through it, and whenever they come to one that they hesitate, you immediately flash the correct answer. Why? You want them to memorize the fact, not to worry over it, not to figure it out, because figuring it out means they're going to count by ones. Now, for example, if you're memorizing the lines to a play, and if you miss a line, nobody tells you to figure it out. You go to they show you the correct line, right? And you look at it and look at it and look at it until you've memorized it. So memorization is easy. If you're always going to flash the correct answer, there's nothing to it. It only becomes a chore when you're telling kids to figure it out and they're so tired of counting by ones, you see. That's when it becomes a chore. You say, figure it out. No, they don't have to figure it out. You want them to memorize the facts so that they can use those facts in solving arithmetic problems. So it's no big deal. And you do that with the times tables, and you want to make sure you use the concretes, the so-called manipulatives, to prove the fact. That's all. Once you've proven it, and once they believe you, that 3 and 3 equals 6, then you do all the patterns, the tens. It's easy to count. Multiply by tens, multiply by fives, multiply by twos. And the others are a little more difficult, so you spend more time at it. But you'd be surprised how well they can learn them if you use that technique of helping them to memorize by rote memorization. And then, of course, you teach fractions and decimals and all of that. But this is the way you start, at least, you know, in getting them to count. First count, then memorize the arithmetic facts by first proving each fact and having them memorize it and then go on from there. Any questions about that? When does this end? I just want to make sure that... 11:30. Okay, we've got plenty of time for questions, if there are any questions on arithmetic. Now, that's simple arithmetic. This is not algebra. This is not... After the kids have mastered the arithmetic facts, they'll be in a much better position to advance into the other functions. But arithmetic first, because they're going to be using it for the rest of their lives every day, every single day. So you want them to have a good grasp on it and to be able to use those abstractions, those 10 symbols. Yes?
Child that is still counting on his fingers in order to, like, do multiplication and things like this, do you just back up and start
with
memorization?
Right, absolutely. Just give them...
That doesn't mean he's ruined his behavior.
No, no, in that case, I think he just has to be trained. He has to memorize things. Now, the thing is, if you've been counting on your fingers for too long, it can become quite a habit. You see, one of the beautiful things about learning the way I've outlined, where your rote memorization is so complete, where you're telling it, no, don't show me, I know it. You see, that creates confidence in your memory. You see, if you have confidence in your memory, that's when you can add up a full, you know, a line of figures, you know, like that, and not worry whether you've made a mistake or not, because... But if you've been counting fingers for many years, it's very difficult to gain that total confidence in your memory. You will always say, oh, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I'm wrong, you see. So you want to avoid that. The way you avoid that problem of constantly slowing down and because your brain is getting fatigued or whatever is to make sure that rote memorization process is as efficient and as complete as possible. Yes?
How far up do you recommend memorizing the multiplication tables?
Up to 12. In additions, tens, but when you get, except when you're dealing with nines, you see, when you're adding up nines, you're going way beyond that, you know. You start with, you know, 0 plus 9, and then you get down to 9 plus 9, and you're into 18 already, you see, as you go down the line. But in multiplications, you do 12s. 12s is, it should be it. That's all you really need, you know. Yes?
I was curious. I was introduced to the abacus, a million years ago, and I can't even remember how it worked. Is there an advantage?
The abacus is a concrete, it's a manipulative.
Yeah,
that's right. It's using that rather than mental arithmetic. In our country, we placed great stress on mental arithmetic because it was discovered that was the most efficient way to develop good arithmetic ability. And so we don't use abacuses. We use the mind. And it's not all that difficult to memorize these things when we do a lot of counting in America, as you know. Yes.
So what math curriculum do you recommend for memorization and repetition?
Well, I have most of that in my book, How to Tutor, but you can always just use any You could write the columns out yourself, put them on flashcards. That's another thing what you should do is after they've memorized them, to make sure that they've memorized, you have the flashcard. Because they're all mixed up. You see, if you're doing the columns in a set form, in perfect order, they learn that easily enough because of the patterns are so simple. But then you want to mix them up. And flashcards are good in using and flashing the particular fact and seeing if they know it. And if they don't, you just flash the correct answer. Just turn around, show them the correct answer, because you want that to be in the brain, memorized. You don't want them to stop and start figuring it out, because they're just going to count by ones. And they know how to count by ones. That's not the problem. They can count by ones. They don't need more practice in counting by ones. What they need is memorization, to memorize that. Yes?
When I was teaching my little boy multiplication, I would often, if he got stuck, I would often say, figure it out, because I wanted to make sure that he knew why 4 times 5 was 20. That was 4 fives or 5 fours.
Yeah. Well, you can always use a method of testing that to make sure he knows that, you see, rather than having him stop. You want to make sure that first it's automatic. That he Now, you're asking why he knows that. If you had shown it to him in concrete, if you had demonstrated that as a fact, he should know that. He should at least believe that, you know, 4 times 5 equals 20, because he's seen it. You've demonstrated it. You had 4 times 5 equals 20, and so you had 4. You've had 1, 2, 3, 4 times 5. 5 times. So you have 4, 4, and he counts them all. And he said, yeah, I believe you. 4 times 5 is 20. Yeah, you're right. 4 times 5. I've proven it, you see. So, Once you proved it to him, once he's accepted that as a fact, he knows it. You know, you don't have to keep asking him, how do you know that 4 times 5 are 20? Well, he'll do that. He'll say, count out the pennies all over again. But then he'll get tired of that, you see. You want to move. Yes?
I have a question about the Adelphi Math program. Are you familiar?
Yes. There's the little girl. As a matter of fact, the two that I'm presently tutoring are using the Abeka program.
And how do you recommend
it's an excellent program.
I find it kind of frustrating.
You do?
They throw in so many, we'll be working on a concept, there's no chance for them to gain that concept before they throw in another one.
Well, that's true. There's an awful lot in those books. Those books are just filled up to here. You can always skip. You can always skip and go on if you feel that there's too much emphasis being placed. I wouldn't hesitate to skip if I thought that they had had enough of that. They already know that and they can move on. But it certainly keeps them busy. Yes?
I have a question, Mr. Blumenfeld, and I've never found anybody that can answer it. When I was taught to subtract.
Yes.
I don't know if I can do this.
Well, do you want, you mean carrying and all of
yes.
that?
Yes.
There are two ways of doing it.
Nobody uses the way I was taught, and I think it's much better on this
movie. Well, let's say 480 minus 362. Okay, so you have to borrow and pay back.
That's how I learned.
Borrow, pay back. So this becomes 10, because you're taking 10 from here and adding it to the 1s, you see. So you're borrowing 10, and you're turning the 0 into 10. That makes this 8. Now you got to pay back. So a 1 here represents 10, you see. So this becomes 7, 7 tens, because you're in the tens column. So this is 7. 8 minus 7 becomes 1, you see. That's how I was taught. Borrow, pay back. Now, there's another method that they use where they do it all on top. Pardon?
This is much easier.
Borrow, pay back.
You never heard of borrow, pay back?
Does it matter which way you do it?
Well, I guess it was done when I was in school. That was the way we were taught. Borrow, pay back. What do you call your method?
Confusion.
Modern math.
No, I think yours is just borrow and borrow. borrow and never pay back. That's right. Yeah, they borrow from the top.
It makes it way confusing because they're writing 5,000 different little numbers and then the top, and then they get all garbage and they can't remember what they're doing with what.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you mean, but borrow and pay back was such a simple concept to learn. Borrow and pay back. I don't think so. I'm going to have to put, I in my book I use borrow and pay back.
Do you?
Yes. Sure, because that's the way I was taught, and I wouldn't know how to do it the other way, frankly. Borrow and pay back.
You're the first person that
That's New York City schools taught borrow, pay back. That's right. It's all right. That's okay. You know, I'm proud of the fact that I go back far enough so that I can tell people how it was done in the correct manner. Where is this end? What time does this end? At 11:35? We have 5 more minutes. Any other questions on cursive, arithmetic, reading, anything you want to ask?
Could you go a little bit more into the division and multiplication and subtraction?
Well, in division, for example, you want to say 892 divided by 56. So, you know, you have the 1 there, and you put that down there, and you have 3 and 3, and then you bring this down, so it's then 56 into 332, and you estimate, 6 times 5 is 30, but that probably would, 6, you try 5, all right, so 5 times 6 is 35, then 5 is 25, 28, let's try 5, so 5 times 6 is 30, 5 times 25, 28, 2, 8 and 5. Yeah, that works, you see. So it's 15 and 52 over, remainder, whatever.
So if a student is properly drilled on addition factors, he can reverse it and subtract, and if he's multiplication, he can reverse it and divide.
Well, you also drill them on subtraction and division. Mm-hmm. Give them plenty of exercises.
How about fractions?
Well, fractions, it's the same principle basically, but you're dealing with simply parts of the whole, that's all. And I have a section on fractions, how to add fractions, how to subtract fractions, how to multiply fractions, and that sort of thing. It's all here. This book goes up to long division, takes in decimals, fractions, etc.
Is this revised since the copy I would have bought about 10 years
ago? No, it's the same copy. One of these days I'm going to do a separate one on arithmetic, because it's such a fascinating subject. When you think that this is the gem of the human intellect, what a gem. You would get excited over teaching it to a child, but our teachers are so bored by it. They hate it so much that they won't even teach it. But if you understand the beauty of this system, the wonderful cross checks, the wonderful patterns that are down, like for example in multiplying nines, how many of you know the patterns in multiplying nines? Yeah. It's a marvelous thing. It's so easy to learn. You know, we think, multiplying nines must be terribly difficult, but you have, 1 times 9 equals 9, 2 times 9 equals 18, 3 times 9 equals 27, 4 times 9 equals 36. So you see, 9, 8, 7, 6, you see. And the pattern is there. So the next one is going to end in 5. It's got to be 45. The next one's got to be 4, so that's, 54. The next one's got to be 3. What is it going to be? 63. Right, simple.
And they all add to 9 was the one. And somebody taught one about on your knuckles.
Yeah, and that's also interesting. This, they all add, 8 plus 1 equals 9, 2 plus 7 equals 9, 3 plus 6 equals 9, 4 plus 5 equals 9, 5 plus 4 equals 9. You see how fascinating this system is? Just by using those 10 abstract symbols, look what we can do with it. I mean, it's just an incredible marvel. And yet our schools won't teach it because they're into algebra and calculus. That's much more important, They're crazy. They're insane. That's what they are. And this is what you have to have to survive. You know? Any other questions? Yes?
What would you recommend for me to reteach myself into a cursive?
What would I recommend? Get any good cursive. Zahner Bloser has a very good cursive. Zahner Bloser. I don't like the Bob Jones cursive. I don't like the Bob Jones cursive. The Zahner Bloser is good, and the Abecker are good. Those two are okay. But you can use this too, if you like, which is very simple. Okay, I want to thank you for your attention. It's been a delight teaching you.